Sweltering temperatures are putting a stress on Texas's power grid. The state faces a nearly $27 billion surplus, and I get kicked out of the Democrat Party convention. All of this on The Headline.
This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brandon Waltons, and this is The Headline. And wow, it was hot in Dallas on Friday morning. The Democrat Party of Texas held their biennial convention, and me and some folks from Texas Scorecard decided to head up there to chat with delegates, see what they care about, what their priorities are. We were up there having some nice conversations, and then this happened. Check this out.
We're just here to talk to people at the Democrat convention. We've been to both.
This is a fascist organization, and you guys.
Okay, thank you so much.
From our caucuses.
Okay, thank you.
Where's the
credentials?
The exit is right there. You're not getting credentials.
Kicked out. So this is the Democrat Party right now, right? But we got the chance to talk to a lot of folks.
Thank you.
Now, notably, Texas Scorecard had been denied for credentials not once, but twice, despite there being a part of the election code that actually says that media is supposed to be allowed to go cover these things. Interesting to wonder what they might be hiding. We're going to have that whole clip for you up at texasscorecard.com and our YouTube page, Texas Scorecard. Now, talking about those sweltering temperatures, they put a real stress on the power grid, with folks wondering whether or not it's going to be able to last throughout the summer. Here to talk about it, we've got the policy director at the Energy Alliance, as well as the host of another Texas Scorecard program here, Liberty Cafe. Bill Peacock, thank you so much for joining us.
Brandon, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
It's been hot, right? I mean, that's obvious. But at the same time, you know, people have been getting perhaps emails from their electric providers. They've seen on the news, ERCOT, who oversees Texas's electric grid, has been telling people to conserve energy as, you know, we perhaps reach a point where, you know, there might be some problems. What exactly happened this week?
Well, Brandon, as you pointed out, the first thing we have to look at is the fact that it's just hot outside. And not just hot, but unseasonably warm. We're not quite up to the levels of the 2011 summer, where that was a historic kind of event. But nonetheless, it's warm, and that's going to put stress on any system. But the reason ERCOT put out these calls to conservation warnings, they call them. They did an informal one last Friday, and then a formal one on Monday, and then again on Wednesday of this week. The reason that they put those out is because that wind was underperforming. Mm-hmm. And it's no secret to those of us who live in Texas, when it's really hot outside, the wind isn't blowing. And that's generally the case in the summer. So you always have to discount how much wind is going to contribute anyway. But this week, it's been really underperforming on Monday and Wednesday. And that's why we came to these close reserve margins, to the point where ERCOT felt like they had to ask us to cut back on our use.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, had that gone the other way, right? Had people not maybe conserved as much as they did, you'd perhaps see situations where people would face blackouts again, right?
Yeah, it perhaps so. And I think that, I mean, the warning we get from this, what we learn from this situation, both this and then in reference to the 2021 blackouts as well, is that Texas has put ourselves into a situation where we are deeply dependent on the sun and the wind to keep the electricity going in our state.
Texas is, you know, often referred to, right, as the energy capital, right, of the United States. Why are we in a position where, you know, solar, wind, right, and other unreliable energy sources can throw the state's power grid to the brink of disaster?
Well, you know, if you talk to a lot of people who are knowledgeable about this, they're going to spend a lot of time trying to go through complex discussions and try and, you know, massage the issue. But really, the truth is really simple about all this. Since about 2005, the federal government, the state of Texas, and local governments here in Texas have poured about $23 billion worth of subsidies and other benefits to the renewable energy industry. And the renewable energy industry has responded just like common sense or economic sense would tell you. They have poured $66 billion into renewable generation in the state, chasing after those subsidies. And that's pretty good when you think about it. They get $1 of guaranteed return for every $3 they invest without even worrying how much they sell their product for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a bad investment from their perspective. But meanwhile, you look at, you know, what's happened here, not only potentially what could have happened this week, but you mentioned it, you know, February of last year, where we had the winter storm. You had some folks out of power for days, nearly a week, in situations there. And a lot of that as well was due to the failure of solar and wind.
Yeah, absolutely it was. And that's, I mean, obviously, that was also historically cold weather.
Sure.
And there were going to be problems with the system no matter what. We probably would have seen at least rolling blackouts in that situation, just given how severe the weather was. But probably the difference between just rolling blackouts, where you lose electricity for 30 minutes and it goes on to the next neighborhood and the next house and nobody's, you know, really inconvenienced. In this case, we saw, like you said, days worth of blackouts and days without water. And the reason for that probably was because the wind stopped blowing as well during that period. It was down to as low as 5% of its normal average output. The week before that, the Monday before that, it was up around 40% of the grid. It was down to about 5% of the grid that night at 1 o'clock in the morning. And of course, at 1 o'clock in the morning, as you well might imagine, Brandon, solar wasn't providing any energy.
Yeah, not particularly bright at that time of night.
Yeah. And so I think that factor that the wind and the sun wasn't working is probably the difference between just rolling blackouts and the kind of blackouts we saw.
The legislature last session, said that they did, they passed some legislation to try to prevent things like this from happening. What else does the legislature, in your estimate, need to do in order to further protect Texas's grid, especially as, you know, the state grows and there's more people moving here?
Yeah, well, I would say it's not that they further need to do something. It's that they need to do something useful at all, because I don't think they've done anything to this point to improve the operation of the grid. Matter of fact, mm-hmm. I think they're making it worse. We just, at the Energy Alliance, we just put out a paper today talking about how the politicization of the Texas electricity market has led to the failure and the collapse of reliability in this market. And in addition to the greatly increased expense for electricity for Texans. Mm-hmm. And so what the legislature did was they refused to acknowledge that it was their intervention, the regulators' intervention into the market over the last 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. That led to a lot of these problems. And it wasn't just renewables, there were a lot of other issues. And what they did was they doubled down after the blackouts in the 2021 legislative session. They were essentially in a situation, if they admitted their role in these things, both through supporting renewables and these other interventions, then they have to be held accountable for that. Instead, they doubled down and have intervened more in the market. Mm-hmm. And what they've done essentially now is they're shifting the risk for all the new generation that's coming online from generators, who now, if they invest and it fails, it costs them money, to consumers. Because mm-hmm. now, after this, if they build new generation and we don't need it or it's too expensive, consumers are going to have to bear the cost.
Last question real quick. Don't see it getting cooler anytime soon with the temperatures that we've been seeing. Is this going to be an issue that we're going to continue to see this summer, do you think?
Well, this summer, there's not much we can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as long as it's hot and the wind doesn't blow, or even, you know, this week, it got cloudy out in West Texas while it was still sunny over here, solar dropped off too. So there's not much we can do this summer. But going back to your previous question, you know, over the next year and two and three, if we stop renewable energy subsidies in Texas, if we compensate for the federal renewable energy subsidies, and if we get the PUC out of the business of micromanaging the market and managing prices in the market, then I think within, you know, 2 years, 3 years at the max, we can stop this kind of reliability problems that we're having in Texas.
Oh, excellent. Sounds good. Thank you so much for joining us, Bill.
Thank you very much, Brandon.
In other news, Comptroller Glenn Hager announced yesterday that the state will be facing a nearly $27 billion surplus when the legislature meets next session in January of next year. Here to talk about what they would like to see done with the money, we've got Tim Hardin, the president of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Wow, $27 billion, that's a lot of money, and that's certainly more than a lot of folks expected, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, I want to say at the end of the last legislative session, we were like 7.85 or right around 8 billion, and then it jumped to 12, and then we had this $14 billion jump to $27 billion. It has to be a historical, I haven't checked the numbers, but it has to be a historical surplus. It is unbelievable the amount of money that our government's going to be working with this next go round.
And what does that mean? Because normally when the state receives a surplus, first of all, they're usually not this big, right? But you know, that money maybe gets thrown to a pet project or two, or in most cases just kind of gets absorbed into the overall growth of government, right? You don't really see what happens to it. It's going to be hard, I think, for that to happen with this large amount of money, though.
Yeah, I'm sure that the Austin establishment and lobbyists are already, you know, looking how they can spread that money around and grow government. But I think the difference is this year, there is such an outcry from the grassroots for tax relief. People are literally drowning in property tax debt. It was a major conversation piece at the Republican Party convention down in Houston. It was part of the platform. You've even had Abbott and you've had Patrick come out making statements promising relief. And so to take all of that money and just grow government with it, as a matter of fact, to take anything but the vast majority of it and move it to property tax relief is going to result in some outcries from the grassroots.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly a lot of calls, right, that we've seen for property tax relief. And yet, you know, I'm looking at a statement from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who has put out his sort of priorities of what he would like to see done with the money. And it looks like the starting position is $4 billion. So $4 billion out of $27 billion. Is that enough?
That's nowhere close to enough. As a matter of fact, that wouldn't even come close to even dealing with the appraisal increases or inflation, which is now, as we found out the other day, what, 9.1%. The reality is it's going to take the vast majority of this. And if we classify what these surplus dollars are, it's our money. This is money that was not budgeted by the government. This is taxpayer dollars, and it deserves to go one place and one place only, right back into taxpayers' pockets.
Are we seeing any movement from some lawmakers over the, you know, even before this surplus was announced? Are we seeing, what are we able to see from what they're saying right now about what your expectation would be for the chances of meaningful property tax relief happening in the next session?
I think for a lot of the conservative lawmakers, there is a want to do that. As I've watched the House Appropriations Committees and the Senate Finance Committees, this certainly has come up. Now, there's been a lot of other subjects as far as where else we could spend that money. Infrastructure was mentioned. Of course, schools are always going to be mentioned. So ultimately, talk is cheap. You have to walk the walk to prove it to me. I do think there is a core group of conservative legislators that would like to see the vast majority of this surplus be used to pay down on M&O compression rates. The first person that comes to my mind is Tom Oliverson. He, of course, carried the bill in the second and third special session that would allocated 90% of surplus dollars. We're hoping that he will file a similar or exact same bill this next go round. And of course, if that was the case, we would see a massive amount of that surplus if this was passed, which I believe it had 52 or 53 co-authors in the special session. So we're close. We have support for sure.
You recently, your organization recently, I guess a few months ago at this point, announced and rolled out the Prosperity Plan, which includes a three-part plan that includes property tax, eliminating property taxes. What's been the reaction over the last couple months to the plan?
Overall, it's been overwhelmingly received well. The biggest question we get asked, of course, when we're dealing with property taxes is, what are you going to replace it with?
Right.
And our answer has consistently been, nothing. And the reason we continually say nothing is because we've kept our eye on this surplus. And if, for those that don't know, for instance, a year's worth of school maintenance and operation tax to operate statewide is about $31 billion. Mm-hmm. With the ESF added in, which is sitting at about $13.66 billion, we're sitting at about $40 billion in unallocated money that could be used to pay down an M&O compression rates. And so we have an overwhelming amount of surplus dollars. We don't have a revenue problem in Texas. We have a spending problem in Texas. The solution is not creating more taxes or increasing taxes. The solution is cutting government, shrinking the size of government, and using those surplus dollars to give people property tax relief. And we want legislators to put us on a path towards elimination. We view compression of M&O as the first and easiest low-hanging fruit to deal with in this next biennium.
Last question real quick. You made me think of this. You're talking about the 9.1% inflation rate that we've seen announced, and inflation, of course, is skyrocketing. It really makes you kind of think about, okay, if the state government's budget is going to grow by population plus inflation, that's a pretty big growth on its own.
Yeah, it is. You know, not to dodge that question, right? But that would include probably more than a 10% growth, which would put us on pace to about triple our budget within the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. One thing we did see, I believe it was in the House Appropriations Committee when the LBB came out there, they stated all of the spending limits that we have. And then they said, okay, well, we just need this much vote threshold to break that, basically to overcome that spending limit, which is hilarious to me that they're already, with this massive surplus, we're already kind of getting reminders like, hey, we only need 3/5, or hey, we only need a majority to break this and continue to spend. Mm-hmm. And so we just passed one of those major spending limits last go round. And so the last conversation we need to be having right now is how we break our spending limit. We need to stay within the spending limit. As a matter of fact, I would say we need to cut and go below the spending limit and give some taxpayers relief.
I know a lot of taxpayers will be asking for that. And now's the time, right? Now's the time to start asking. So thank you so much for joining, Tim.
Appreciate it, Brandon. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode. As a reminder, you can check out the rest of our other shows at texasscorecard.com. We've got the Cambry Show, which is just premiered, as well as some other shows and podcasts we'd love for you to check out. If you're watching this on YouTube, go ahead and hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit that bell so that you get notifications anytime we're live here at Texas Scorecard. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.